light should work.
Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, now we're on the process of chanting. There are two types of namabhas. Chaya Namabhash and Pratibimba Namabhash. Chanting the name without offense, but devoid of proper knowledge, is called Chaya Namabhash. When, through devotional association, a devotee obtains proper knowledge, it becomes pure Nam, Shuddha Nam. When the chanting of the name is covered by material desires, by jnana and karma, or by dragon renunciation, is called Pratibimba Namabhash. At times, Pratibimba Namabhas comes close to Chaya Namabhas, and at times it turns to Aparad. For Namaparad, there is no other remedy than to continually chant in the association of devotees. Association of devotees, Vaishnavas, according to chanting. I'm not sure what that means. Oh, okay. This is a heading. Okay. So here, Chaya and Pratibimba. So here you're always, as we were discussing before, you're looking at what's the prominence, what's the main drive. Is that if your main point is the chanting, serving and all that, and you're trying to do everything for Krishna as best you can, even though you may not be, still that's Chaya Namabhas, right? Pratibimba means that one is distracted actually by the material desires or by jnana, and that becomes more prominent. Right? In that case, then the chanting takes on a different flavor. So it says here, sometimes it's very close to chaya, because, in other words, the prominence of the karma agyana is not as great. So then it will be more like chaya, but other times it may be very great, and then it will take on the nature of aparad. Because then karma is then one's just fully absorbed in materialistic activities, fruitive activities. And so then the actual chanting, there may not be too much, the element of trying to please the Lord is not so prominent, it's not so much there. Then you have, because you have this fine line between just that one tends towards activities and knowledge. It's another is that you actually think it's the knowledge that makes it work, or other things that make it work. Like that. Can you just check what that is? Yeah, just tell them to try a different end of the building. Does this make sense? These things are very fine. So they're not gross elements that you can just, either means another. You're trying to come to the point where that Chaya Namabhas, then in proper association, one gets proper understanding, then it comes to the platform of Shuddha Nam. In other words, we're chanting, it's well meant, but we don't know so much actually about the whole process, about devotees, about what we're doing, then in that case, it's not as strong because this is Krishna and everything around about it is about Krishna, so we don't know that. But still, it's the mood is proper. Does that make sense? Right? Well, the Pratibimba is that these other things become more prominent. Like when we're saying stuff like, you know, we're just being real, we're getting real about our life, and so we just have to, you know, do our work, take care of the family, do all that kind of stuff. That's what's prominent, you know, and so I don't have time to be, you know, all this fanatic and all these other things. That's pratibimba. Right? Because it borders on offensive, and because all those things that you're saying is, oh, I'm just being, okay, it's one thing if you can't tell the difference. You think, oh, I'm just doing service, and you're getting distracted by these other things. Then that means you don't have enough knowledge to be able to connect what you're dealing. You're dealing with the family. That's not what makes it chaya pratibimba. It's a matter of whether you don't have enough knowledge, so you don't know how to properly connect all those things to Krishna, but you're willing to, or it's a matter of you don't think it's necessary. So that becomes pratibimba. Right? When you think it's not important to connect these things, or, you know, that's unnecessary, we're just being practical, we're just being honest, we're being straightforward, we're being this, that, blah, that's pratibimba. Right? Of course, we have the gross thing where you have the impersonalists, they're chanting the holy name for liberation, or the karmis are chanting the holy name, you know, to get there as an element of karmakanda. That's obviously pratibimba. But that's why it's saying is pratibimba comes close. At times, pratibimba comes close to chaya. And at times, it turns to aparad. So that means then also, then chaya, if it's not being carefully done with, can turn into the pratibimba. So there's that fine line that the devotees would be dealing with, right? It's very obvious, okay, the acharyas are dealing with one level, and the karmis and jnanis are dealing with another. But the point is if we're kind of in between those two, then we want to try to be pushing it towards we're trying to get Shuddhanam. That's what we're trying. But if it hasn't come to that, then better Chaya Namabhas than Pratibimba. Does this make sense? Yeah? Right. Yeah. Okay, then Vaishnavas according to chanting. It probably means how, it means the levels of advancement according to chanting. Those Vaishnavas who are surrendered to the pure name are called Vaishnavas, following the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya. Those who chant the name in this way periodically are called Vaishnavas. Those who chant in this way continuously are called better Vaishnavas. Those who proximity causes others to chant purely are called the best of Vaishnavas. You have some magic mantra or?
Magic hands.
Magic hands, okay. Maybe we just pushed the wrong button, maybe. Okay. Thank you for the magic hands. Okay. So those who are surrendered to the pure name, whether we are on that platform to be able to chant it, but we're surrendered to the pure name. That's our goal. That's what we want to do. We want to serve the Lord by chanting his pure names. So that it says that then one is Vaishnav, right? So in that category. Then of that, those who chant the name in this way periodically means occasionally that real, you know, drive and that focus and everything like that. And so that pure chanting then comes, but it's occasional. So that's they're called devotees, they're Vaishnavas. Then those who chant like that continuously, they're better Vaishnavas. Right? And then those who, just by being around them, other people chant the pure name, they're the best Vaishnavas. Right, so basically you have here, also you have the neophyte, the madhyama, and the uttama, like that. So it can also be defined in that way. But this is how you tell the levels of devotees. Right? Other things are important social elements of social etiquette. But this is actually your way of, this is the main way of telling. There's I think, three different, Lord Chaitanya gives three different ways. Also faith, you know, is that if the faith is there, it can be distracted. Then that's it means one's a devotee, but one has to be very careful of the association. Those who will not get distracted, but they may not have an answer to every question, then that's better. And those who never are distracted always have an answer, that's the best. Like that. So that's faith in the name. There's a third point that is used. I don't remember what's the category. Like that. One who is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is understood to be a Vaishnava. Therefore, you should offer all respects to him. A person who is always chanting the holy name of the Lord is to be considered a first-class Vaishnava. And your duty is to serve his lotus feet. A first-class Vaishnava is he whose very presence makes others chant the holy name of Krishna. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed about different types of Vaishnavas. The Vaishnava, the Vaishnava Avatara, and the Vaishnavatma. He thus successfully explained all the symptoms of a Vaishnava to the inhabitants of Kulinagram. Okay, that was Chaitanya Charitamrita. Madhya Lila 1672-74-75. Okay. One should take association with all these Vaishnavas. One should respect the ordinary Vaishnava. One should take shelter at the feet of the better and best Vaishnavas. Serving such Vaishnavas, the householder Vaishnava should celebrate and feel satisfied. Whether the Vaishnava is a householder or renounced, according to his level, the devotee should respect him. The devotee will seek out and serve the Vaishnava superior to himself. Now, a quote from Nectar Devotion. One should taste the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees. And one should associate with the devotees who are more advanced than oneself and endowed with a similar type of affection for the Lord. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Purva Vibhag, 240. One should not find fault in the previous sins of the Vaishnava, nor the sins which have disappeared or about to disappear, nor should he find fault in the accidental commission of sin. Right here, it's very, very important to understand this term accident. This is probably one of the most misunderstood terms that the neophyte devotee will deal with. Accident means not that it's not, means accident means it's not the intention, but one is overwhelmed. Accident doesn't mean it's because he thought, oh, I'm going to go to this place and do this activity, that's planned, therefore it's not accidental. Right? Accidental can be 6 months. Right? When it's not accidental is when they decide this is good, this is nice, or this is okay, or there's nothing wrong with it, or it's no big deal, and then they commit themselves to it, then it's no longer accidental because there's commitment to it. Does that make sense? It's just like if we were to use that, it means so by this, then that means then we want to go back to Godhead. That's our determination. But if we do something that's not ideal in that line, if you ask, is that good? You'll say no. But by habit, you're doing it. So that means our not doing what's proper, this is accidental. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
What about the element of premeditation? Is that not the determining or an influencing factor?
Depends upon what the predetermination. It's just like this. If someone gets in Maya, then there is a certain set of the modes that will go through. So it's not that one is necessarily independent in that. That's why it's an accident. So in that, there will be meditation and figuring out how to go here and how to go there and do all these different things. But that, if you ask, that's not actually the ultimate intention. Does that make sense? So that element there, that is something, if it happens just on the spot, then that's you can tell that that's accident. But that can happen for some time. This is the difficulty that comes in. That is what comes up in the discussion with Krishna with Arjuna. Because Krishna says that someone's in a fallen position, they're still considered sadhu. So Arjuna says, okay, I understand that when they have been in a fallen position, but they understand this is wrong, and they're not doing that anymore. So we shouldn't say anything about what they've just been doing, right? So as Vaishnavas, we're not interested in prayaschitta, so that they've given it up, then okay, then fine, we move forward. While if we were dealing with prayaschitta after having gone through the proper purificatory rituals, then they would be considered in this position. But Krishna says, no, even in that position he's still saintly, because he understands this is not ideal, but I'm overwhelmed, and so therefore I'm involved like this. Right? So it's something that that's why I said it's a very, very fine point. Because if somebody said they made a plan, then it's first degree. you know, like that. But that's very easy, because then your judgments are just done like that. You can wipe your hands and walk off. The point is to be able to understand the actual point that the position is in takes maturity and takes responsibility, which people don't want to accept. Like that. Because you're dealing with the Vaishnava community, so you have to be able to differentiate between, you know, what is planned. It doesn't matter. Time isn't actually the element. Because if time's the element, then how do we think that we've been chanting Hare Krishna, even if it's for 30 years, how do you put that against being in the material world for unlimited lifetimes of Brahma? And then that's all going to be wiped away by 30 years of chanting? So in the same way, is we're not willing to let you know, so many years of chanting wipe away, you know, a month, 3 months, 6 months, even some years of nonsense. But so how did we wipe out all the other nonsense? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So how did that happen? So that's what I'm saying, is that it's not well understood. You know, it's pretty standard. You know, it's like that. We see the example, you know, those generally in the, you know, had Judaic Christian upbringing. Then you have, you know, the lady at the wall, and then everybody there with their stone. So she's done something wrong, yes, but it's not that everybody else is in that pure state to make that judgment. She's done something wrong, yes. So that has to be corrected, but who's in the position to correct it? Right? So the thing is his point was, is, why are you doing this? There must be a reason. That has to be removed. Just to punish somebody doesn't mean it'll work, because that's why we don't put our faith in prayaschitta. Prayaschitta doesn't necessarily correct any situation. It's the process of chanting the holy name, devotional service, association with Vaishnavas, that's the only thing that corrects it. And modern day prayaschitta means not to do those things. So where does that come from? It doesn't come from any scripture, no acharya. Right? No, none of the, you know, how you say, the sadhus and all that say this. So where is it coming from? Right? So that's the difficulty, is this definition of accidental. Accidental means you don't plan to be in that fallen position. But Maya covers you. That's the first thing she does, is cover, then throws. So you don't even really realize you're in that fallen position. So that's still accidental. When you realize and you say, this is fine, you're committed to it, then you can say, this person's got a problem. Just like it said, even in dealing with the spiritual master, they've fallen away. But if they're not committed to that fallen lifestyle, then one still deals with them. But once they commit to that lifestyle, and this is where the way it is, and they're fine with that, then at that time, then you pull out and take shelter somewhere else. Does that make sense? So this whole point is that there's night, there's day, and then there's twilight. So everyone likes to deal with the night and day. No one wants to take responsibility for the twilight. Because the twilight, there's so many variations, it becomes very complex, and you have to be very mature as an individual to deal with it. So it's very easy to do the other thing, you know. Somebody comes out, everyone yells and screams, you know, they tie him to the stake, they light the fire, and everybody, you know, thinks, you know, what a bad person they were and this and that. What was the problem? They were a little artistic. They could draw nice drawings. So therefore they were a witch. You know what I'm saying? And everybody feels good about themselves that now the society has purged the witches. But it doesn't actually solve a problem, right? The church did not end up any purer after the Spanish Inquisition. You know, it is not known as that was the period of enlightenment of the church. You know what I'm saying? Nothing was like that. So it's very nice to say those things. You know, they had the thing, what was it called? It's called the question. Right? That if they thought that you were something that you weren't, you know, if you were a Judaizer or something that was inappropriate, they would your hands are behind your back, they would tie a rope on that and put it over something and lift you up. So then if you were not guilty, then God would give you the strength and the forbearance to put up with the torture, and then you wouldn't crack. But of course, if you didn't the first time, they keep going until you did. Like that. And if you took any one of those priests that were putting anybody to the question and put them to the question, they would crack on the spot. Right? They couldn't pass their own test like that. Because they're attributing that when you have faith like Jesus Christ did, right, then, you know, we can understand you're innocent. But, you know, they don't have faith like Jesus Christ. So then how will it work? So if it didn't work then, it still won't work today. Does that make sense? So the point is you have to be able to understand there's black, there's white, and then there's gray. And if you can't deal with gray, then you should not be in a position to give judgment. It's that simple. That's what Manu says. And Manu is for leaders. If you can't deal on judgment to be taken to aspect everything about the person and the situation, everything about it, you can't do that. You want to put him in a little box and a little bureaucratic and deal with a little bureaucratic rule. You should not be in that position of judgment. Because if you make a judgment, it will not only destroy you, your own family, and everything connected with you. Even your yatra, it'll destroy your yatra. It'll destroy your temple, your community, your congregation. It will destroy all of that. And one may say, no, but it's chanting. Look what it did to Ramachandra Khan. He performed the Vaishnava Aparad. The Muslims came and destroyed the whole village. And he was the only one that did the wrong thing. It's so powerful, Vaishnava Aparad. Yes?
So then what is our scope? You live here in a big community, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on.
That's why we're supposed to be reading what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here and trying to develop that greed that I just want to chant the pure holy name. That's what we should be doing instead of trying to figure out, you know, who did what to who and when.
And what should be the attitude when we see that major offenses are being committed and people are just looking the other way, or they think like, oh, you know, poor fellow, maybe he deserved it, you know. Was his lot in life to go through that purification? And
yeah, as long as it's not me, it's what to do.
Yeah,
That's a hard one, because the thing is because even there we're still dealing with devotees, because the devotees who are acting improperly, in the leadership position according to Shastra, they're still doing it with the determination that they're trying to serve Krishna. Right? And the persons that they're judging, you know, were trying to do their best to serve Krishna. So that's why it's very, very delicate. Because it's not just a matter of cut and dry. There was a book, I don't remember the name at all. It was written by a seventh generation Sri Vaishnava. He wrote this after watching, you know, just the development of, you know, the whole Sri Vaishnava culture over seven generations. And he wrote this book. The only thing that sticks to my mind from that book was that he said a person who makes an offense and then a second devotee criticizes him for that. So that's Vaishnava Aparad. But now it says the third person who criticizes the second person for making that Vaishnava Aparad, right? He also, that's Vaishnava Aparad. Because the point is they are devotees. So they have to be dealt with in a different way. So it's a matter of education, these kind of things. So it's if one is in a position, one can do something about it, one does. If not, then one just takes shelter of the holy name. Like that. But basically, one just stays out of it. Like that. If one can do something, then that should be done. If one can't, then one just chants. Because otherwise, then it's very delicate, because the whole thing, you're dealing with devotees. Like that.
And if the community is going to hell,
live on the edge. isn't that the modern thing? Live on the edge. You know where the excitement is.
Book your flight.
Yeah, you could try that. You know, what is it? When the going gets tough, the tough go shopping. Go to Calcutta while they're making it. Yeah, okay, yeah. Tough go preaching. No, it's a fine point, is that they're doing it for the purpose that they think they're doing you know, a proper thing. But without the balanced understanding, then it won't give a long-term result. It'll give a short-term result, which does something right now. But the problem is since we're in Krishna consciousness for a long time, you know, it comes back, you know, after, you know, 6 months or a year, 3 years or 5 years, or it just comes back, you know. So then I think that's one of our books, right? Coming back, yeah. So that's the thing, is if it's not done right, it comes back. So that's the importance of Guru Sadhu and Shastra, because there it may take longer to work it out, it may be more difficult, but having worked it out, it's worked out. Well, the other, you can work it out very quickly, you're dealing with, you know, modern opinions, you know, it sounds nice, you can sell it very easily, but the problem is because it's so easily sold, it's also generally quite cheap. And then it may work for that moment, but that moment sometimes is only as long as one's sitting together in the room. As soon as one leaves the room, it stops working. You know, so that's a problem. So that's why it's recommended that all these different elements of, you know, the devotional elements and all that have to be taken into consideration. Because if you're looking at it, that it's actually the attitude that's the devotional service, not what's being performed, right? Then one can start to distinguish between the action that's being performed and what is their attitude in performing it, right? So what the action they're performing is wrong, right? So that's not as improper action. But what exactly is the mentality, right? So the mentality is that if they've been swept away by it, then that's one thing. But if they think this is perfectly fine, what's the problem? Then that's a completely different thing. You know? So that's there. Because Prabhupada did say that philosophical fall down is greater than a sensual fall down. Though I would say the inverse is the common practice. Like that. People can have the weirdest philosophies, no one says boo. Right? Because that means you'd have to know philosophy to be able to say it's wrong and to be able to establish it. You know, that's the difficulty. Is that okay?
And to clear up the confusion or the offensive situation usually requires a person of higher capacity to actually take charge and, you know, help them get out of their situation or give a verdict. But usually you see that such persons, number one, are very scarce, number two, are usually not much interested in getting involved in all those issues.
Yeah, because the problem is not the issues, because before everyone would deal with the issues. The problem is having dealt with the issues, that the general devotee doesn't have faith that this will actually solve the issue. Because they don't have enough faith, therefore you have to use these lower methods of judgment and prosecution, like that. Because they don't think it's something else. They think in a very, very simplistic way, so that's why it's done. But amongst those who are more mature, it's not necessary. Because they understand if there's a change in the attitude, everything can be changed, like that. But the others, even the attitude, they're not sensitive to attitude, they don't even see their own attitudes, or let alone those around them. So they can't understand that something has been physically done wrong, there should be a physical result. You know, observable wrong, observable result. So that's why generally those things that are known then are dealt with more observably. The things that are not known, those are dealt with, it says the Shastra, by chanting the holy name. By studying Shastra, by reciting Shastra, and chanting. In other words, Shravanam Kirtanam is considered by Manu the main means of purification. But because your common person doesn't have faith in that, therefore if an offense is known, you know, outside the circle of mature persons, then it must be dealt with in an observable way that they will think something's happened. But basically, most all this, prayaschitta is there for purification. But most important in purification is changing the mentality. If you change the mentality, then the reaction to the sin is already gone. Like that.
but then you have to be determined that you're not going to do it anymore and all that, then that will then purify properly. One will get properly situated. But just understanding this is wrong and that I don't want to do this, then that all right there already clears the situation. But that means they actually feel that. They don't just say it like that.
But usually these are patterns which just don't go away. And the person might even be aware of themselves of their shortcomings. But as you said earlier, it might just take a certain number of months or even sometimes years for those things to clear up. Mm-hmm. So then what is the solution? That they go and, you know, buy an island, or that they just...
Well, if you've got money to buy an island, why not? You know, just make sure it has coconut trees.
Yeah. In Indonesia, islands are cheap.
Okay.
So, company-sponsored vacation.
Yeah.
But the
thing is you have to see what's going to be the best situation. Because in any case, we see always here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur brings it back to association. So that situation in which they can take the best advantage of good association and move forward. Means if someone has a weakness in a particular area, and by being exposed to that area there'll always be a problem, then you would naturally adjust it from there. But it's not because that's the punishment. It's a matter of that you have to remove them from that situation so they do better. Like that. You know, in other words, the benefit and the upliftment of the individual has to be a part of the consideration. And at the same time is that there must be education of the community. Because if they claim to be devotees, then they should be educated in what is the Vaishnav, you know, the Vaishnav viewpoint on things. Because if you remember, you know, previously you'd be there at the temple, and there was someone in the temple, and that person disappeared one day. No one knew, he just disappeared. And 6 months later, 9 months later, then, you know, one evening they come knocking on the door and they look a little bit, you know, worse for the weather. But whatever it is, they come back and they say, you know, I've come back. And everybody, oh, great, you're here, you know. And, you know, what happened? Oh, I was in Maya and this and that. And generally that's the end of the conversation. Or sometimes, you know, it's, well, you know, is this or was that? And that was it. And then after that, they just went back, set up the way they were and continued. And no one ever brought it up again. Like that. Because there was faith that the chanting process was the powerful process. So now that something happens and they're eternally damned, then what philosophy is that? It's not ours. You know, so definitely there's not faith in the holy name, faith in the association of devotees. You know, it's, you know, and it limits you actually to which religion it is. Right? Because most other religions don't have the concept of eternal damnation. There's only one that does. Right? And then if you add on top of it, then you have basically two major divisions. Well, basically we know, because basically, unless it is, very few would be, you know, how you say, Coptic, you know, Egyptian, you know, how you say, Christianity, or East Orthodox, or Russian Orthodox, or whatever these other schools. So now it's just a matter, do they accept the concept of authority, saintly persons and that, then it's Catholicism, and if they don't, then it's Protestant. You know? And then if it's Protestant, there's just, you just have to add, you know, three initials onto the front of that, and then you have the complete picture. Like that. Does that make sense? So that generally then becomes an obstacle in the devotional process. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is trying to make the distinction so that we don't fall into those habits or traps. Not that one hasn't come from that kind of a situation, not that one may not be working on that, but one should be able to tell the difference so that he doesn't get carried away by it. Otherwise, it's not going to do himself good or anybody else any good. Like that. That's the difficulty. So the idea is that if one wants to purify him, means if you want to deal with the purity of others, then you have to be in a state of purification. Right? In other words, someone who is doing something can get something done. Someone who's doing nothing can't get anything done. So if you're purifying yourself, then you can purify others. So if you come up with, ideas that actually don't purify means there must be something weak in your process of purification. Or you're not making the connection between the successful processes you're using on yourself and that those same processes will work for others. Does that make sense? Okay? Kind of? Okay.
Okay. One should not find fault in the previous sins of a Vaishnava, means what he did before he became a devotee, nor the sins which have disappeared, right? Means the sins that were there, they're not there now, right? They may have been there before, but they're not there now. Or about to disappear, means they're in the process, they're working on it. So that means still there's some little shadow of it. Nor should he find fault in accidental commission of sin. So in other words, sin that's present right now, sin that's on its way out, has gone out, or was done before becoming a devotee, those are not referred to. Right? It's a very, very important point is that we see that Manu makes is that when somebody has performed the prayaschitta, when that's finished, no one should ever refer to what he did wrong before ever again. If they do, that's a sin. So this idea, you can never be pure, if you can never be, that's just an outright sinful malecha attitude. That's all. There's no other, you can glorify and say it's politically correct, but we don't care. Shastra abhors that mentality. Because this person is a dyed-in-the-wool, flag-carrying, waving, card-carrying, you know, criticizer of Vaishnavas. And Kutinati is the worst of all the aparads. This person can never purify himself, let alone purify others. Why should they be making a decision on the life of Vaishnavas? Right. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is that one should be looking for the spark. That spark should be fanned. And if there's a big obstacle to that spark, remove the obstacle. But the point is to remove the obstacle so they can move forward. Not to remove the obstacle so you feel you've done some good job, some good nice thing, some welfare work for the community. Because welfare work, if it's not connected to Krishna, one can say it's connected to Krishna, but by these statements, I don't think Krishna accepts it. Right? Someone has a problem that needs to be removed from the situation, definitely they must be removed. But they're being removed because that will make the benefit, one, for the people in the situation, but two, for that individual. So you have to consider all the things. Because the point is they're all jivas. Right? And so if devotees do something wrong, and then they're avoided like the plague, but the karmis who are never doing anything right, then we're so kind and open-minded to, there's something wrong here. Right? There's something wrong. Because it's like, oh, well, this one this, that one that, you know, but they're all malechas and yavanas and this and that. But we can find the good in them. But in the Vaishnavas we can't find the good, then there's something wrong. Yes?
Is that because we can't tolerate our own faults and imperfections?
General tendency is that. That can be a factor, is that you see, is one will only be sensitive to a point that you yourself have or had. Right? But generally, if you had, then you know how to get from has to had. But if you have it, you don't know how to get rid of it, therefore you can't tolerate in others. Though you may have it in the negative, what they have it. But you're still dealing in the same area. You know what I'm saying? In other words, let's say you have someone who, by nature, is a manager. Therefore, when they walk into any situation, they will observe the quality of management. And they will see the good and bad based on that. You know, this is going right, good management, this is going wrong, bad management. Right? Someone who, their field is aesthetics. They walk into any situation, they'll look at aesthetics. You know what I'm saying? So whatever it is that's important to you, relationships, and you walk in, you'll see that. So whatever, that's what you'll see. So if you're seeing this particular quality that's wrong or bad in a person, it's because the principle of that quality is what is there in you. Otherwise, you can't see it. Right? You can only see light and form with your eyes. You don't, not with your ears. So because you have eyes, therefore you see, you know, form and color. Right? So it's because you have that quality, only you see it. Right? Little kids, you can put them in a room with adults who are, you know, doing all kinds of nasty things, and they won't understand what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't have the quality in themselves. And you can take a nasty person and you can put them in a room with a bunch of kids, and all they'll see is, you know, the most, you know, gross, disgusting things going on, even though it's just a bunch of kids playing and being normal kids. You understand? So that's the point, is you see what you have. So now, if that quality is in a purified state, right? In other words, you have your conditioned nature, that's not going to go away. So the question is whether you're dealing with it in a purified state or not. If you're dealing with it in a purified state, it had to have gotten to that purified state. So if you have the quality of purified state, you'll be able to see the good and bad within whatever state someone else is in, and be able to get them from the bad to the good, because you've managed to do that. Or even if you haven't managed, but you're in the process, you'll be able to help someone else take up the process. So that's the point, is whatever you're doing, stage you're at, that you can get others to do. You're chanting Hare Krishna, you can get others to chant. People who aren't chanting Hare Krishna don't get others to chant. Right? You have faith in the name, you give faith in the name. You have faith in the devotional process and the Vaishnav culture, then you can give that to others. You don't have it, you can't give it. So that may be you don't know what's there, or you just don't have it. You don't have the practice. So if you don't know it's there, then, you know, that's just, you know, that's a fault, but you get a reaction for it, but it's not considered so major. Right? But if you know and you don't like that direction, you don't like that element, then that's more of a problem. Does that make sense? You know, the person who's sleeping, you can wake up. The person who's pretending to sleep, you can't wake up. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Yes.
So the concept that certain activities, certain sinful activities are so drastic that they're not to be forgiven is mundane?
Basically. Because otherwise the soul is pure. What has the soul got to do with that?
But if you take an activity like, for instance, child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So the person has been punished and he has repented and he has reformed, then society should forgive him.
Should.
But whether the person who has been suffering from that individual will forgive them...
That's up to them.
That's up to them.
Because the point is forgiveness is an important element of the human culture. Because if they don't forgive, then they'll have to take birth again.
They may forgive, but they may still choose not to have to deal with that person.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's not a problem at all, because then there's just a matter of you're dealing with an emotional element that comes up, makes you feel uncomfortable. That's fine. So many people may do something you don't like, so you avoid them, you know. But it's not that if you bump into them that you don't deal in proper Vaishnav etiquette. But as far as you're concerned, you won't spend your time with them or, you know, do other activities with them. So that's natural. That's not the problem. But to cultivate that anger and all that, because anger is ignorance, and so you're only going to get yourself more hurt by it. It's not that that's not something there and pain's not there, but the point is how else are you going to move forward unless you do it yourself? You know what I'm saying? Others can give you support so you can move forward, but you still have to do it yourself. You know? Ultimately, you have to do it yourself.
Well, according to Manu, the penalties are quite severe for a lot of these, you know, crimes or wrongdoings. And nowadays...
But some of them aren't. That's the thing, is if you study, then you get a balance of what is severe and what's not. You know what I'm saying? That also is there. So, that then you have to be able to understand what's the principles behind it. Like somebody steals, like a person in the business, he cheats on his weights and measures and this and that. There's fines to be paid. But someone actually cheats who's a goldsmith, then he's taken out in public and cut to pieces with razors. Not just you cut off his head or cut off his finger. You cut him to small pieces with razors. Because people, gold is their whole, it's their, you know, their security. So they have, buy ornaments, they have this, they think it's going to be valuable. So in the future when they have problem, they can sell that gold and get the money back. But if they've been cheated and it's not gold, you've destroyed their whole life. So just what things are more severe and what they're less severe, that only the Shastra says. It's just like otherwise we take across the board, all stool is impure, but cow dung is pure. Or all bone is impure, but conscious pure. So that's why it's important that the Shastra is studied. Otherwise, there is generic things that are bad, but there's certain things within that are worse or not. You know, like there's like difference between thievery and dacoitry. Right? Because thievery means being unknown, you go and take something. That's wrong. Right? But dacoitry, I can't remember what's the modern term for that. But where you actually go in, there's physical harm to people to steal the thing. Like that. So that's worse. You know? So then all these different things, it gives what are the worst things. Like that. And so you don't mind that something is so strong. But the point is 20 years ago, no one cared. 20 years ago, no one cared if the kids basically got educated or not, were taken care of or not. Right? As far as administration and other things, their mommies cared. But other than them, no one cared. And so, at some point then, when they started having problems, then they started caring. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. And then when they can see it'll be, you know, great financial loss, then everybody's, you know, goes and gets their cards and their flags and starts waving them. But otherwise, it's like, because human life is checked by five things. How do you take care of your children? How do you take care of your women? How do you take care of your cows? How do you take care of your Brahmins? How do you take care of your old people? So the point is it's not that you nail everybody on one and then you don't have to worry about the other four. It's a package. They go together. You know, so therefore, if there's a problem with all these five, then you understand that there's a social weakness there. And so to blame that social weakness on some individuals will be wrong, but it's a symptom that the community is weak. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of they all go together. That's human life. So it's a matter of why do we care for these things? Because in the modern thing, it's the correct thing to do. It's economically a better situation to be in. No, it's because that's human life. If you follow human life, your artha kama automatically come. But here to just take pranamoy and then say that this is it and use it over devotional service, then that's not human, right? You can care about the kids or care about the women's rights or care about the cow's rights. The only reason no one cares much about the cow's rights, they don't get out there and moo and stuff, you know? They're not out there with placards or something, you know? So point is, but unless it's, how do you say? Unless it's seen as that the reason that we care about this is because this is human culture. This is what Krishna expects us to do. Then you can look at it in a balanced way. Because the point is you're going after you don't want to support the kids. That doesn't mean that the Brahmins have to, you know, go down. You know, or you go after the women. You know, the women want their rights, therefore the Brahmins have to go. You know. Or if you're going to support the women, then, you know, the brahmacharis go. or you know what I'm saying? It's always that to get support one, the other, the another one of these five has to go. But the point is they all five have to be supported. Like that. Now we only have to worry about four. But the fifth one's coming. The old man. It's coming. Then we'll start to see, you know, something bubbling on the burner there, you know. Some care and concern. Does that make sense? It's a cultural concern, not a concern of justice and righteousness. Culture includes justice, but justice doesn't stand on its own without the culture. That's the point we're making. We're not saying that justice isn't supposed to be followed, but what we're talking about is in connection with devotional service. The devotional service is based on the philosophy. Right? So you can't go against the philosophy to establish justice. Right? You know, the ends justify the means. That doesn't work. You know, those people who say that never get the result they wanted. Anyway. You know, it just doesn't happen. You know? It just doesn't happen. Oh, and then just the last point, Upadeshamrita 6. One should not see the devotee from the material point of view. So that's the base. In other words, you see from the devotional, then you see what are the weaknesses, and then try to, you know, help correct that. If you can just give some support, it'll correct, or if you have to make adjustment in the situation. But the point is the furtherment of the individual's devotional service. That's what you're looking at. So if to do that, they have to be out of that service. Whenever they're anything to do with money, they're just overwhelmed by it. They always have to take it or do something stupid. Put them in a situation where they're not with money. Right? But to say, oh, he's using, you know, he's this, he's that, and he can't be in devotional service, that would be incorrect. You know? And then if no matter where you put him, he still makes trouble, then send him home. You know? And then when he feels, you know, when he's, you know, strong enough and people are confident, then he can try again. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Panimanandini.